Today on Ag News Daily.
More economics on the farm with slowness a bit, I think. We have prosperity. We have more money to spend toward conservation.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and happy Friday here on the Ag News Daily Podcast. This is Delaney Howell, of course, joined by our summer intern, Madison Honkamp. We are solo today without Mike. He is coming back to the Iowa State Fair for tomorrow. Madison, you're heading to the State Fair today, is that right?
Yes, it is County Fair Day, and my dad is on our County Fair Board, so all of the fair boards kind of join together at the State Fair Manager's house and have a dinner, and we get to talk to some of the fair board the State Fair Board members, and we get to see our County Fair Queen and our County Fair King, so we always go the first Friday of the State Fair.
Well, that will be really fun. And we are also going to be at the State Fair tomorrow, shooting some footage and videos, posting on our Facebook and Twitter accounts for the Governor's Charity Steer Show.
Yes, definitely tune in for that.
Yes, that'll be about 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. You can tune in with us there. And if you can't make it to the show, or, you know, if you're not from the state of Iowa and you just want to know what the heck we're talking about, it's a really, really neat show. It is a fundraising event put on by the Iowa Beef Industry Council as well as the Iowa Cattlemen's Association to raise funds for the Ronald McDonald House. So all of the steers are donated by 4-H families, so there'll be a 4-H member that will be helping their celebrity, and I say that in quotes, their celebrity showman. So Mike will be showing as one of the celebrities. I got to show in it last year. They pick people from ag and non-ag sectors, so it's really fun to just see everybody come together and raise money for the Ronald McDonald House.
Yes, it really is a great, it's like a unique way for a fundraiser.
Absolutely.
Really.
Yeah, it is. It's a really fun, really neat way.
Well, Delaney, speaking of some fun, I have a fun, quick little Friday-type article here. I really wish Mike could—I need to talk about this with Mike because I think he would really like it as well. But on August 13th of 2020, we will be seeing the Yankees and the White Sox playing in Dyersville, Iowa. And, Delaney, do you know what movie was shot in Dyersville?
I was so upset about this. I heard... Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. I heard today on the radio when I was driving to the gym or something, they were doing a trivia session with two call-in folks, and it was focused on Iowa trivia, and they did not know what movie had been shot in Dyersville. Oh, wait. No, they knew the movie. The people didn't know the town, but it's Field of Dreams, which is an iconic baseball movie, was there in Dyersville, and now they're going to do this cool baseball game. I heard they're only giving out 8,000 tickets, though. So I don't know how I'm going to become one of these 8,000 people, but I would love to go.
I know. I really want to try to be one of those 8,000, but they're putting up a temporary stadium, basically. And then it will be broadcasted. I think Geico is one of the sponsors for it, as well as, of course, MLB is the one that came out with this article announcement. And it will be broadcasted on Fox. And... yeah, I think it'll be a great way for people to see what Iowa's all about, see a landmark that we have. And if you haven't seen Field of Dreams, definitely watch it.
Yes, absolutely. And Dyersville is a very rural town, so it's going to be interesting to see how they host this influx of people. But yeah, that is some fun news to share.
Definitely.
Today.
Definitely.
I've got one other interesting or fun, quirky piece of news. This was sent to me by Gary Rasmussen. Shout out to Gary there in Michigan. Podcast listener who's been on the show with us before, but French's mustard. Do you like mustard, Madison?
No, I do not.
I don't either. Yeah, I'm not a mustard person, but French's mustard is creating an ice cream flavor of French's mustard flavor. That's what the ice cream is going to taste like, is mustard flavored ice cream.
I don't know if there's really any, actually, no, I take that back. My dad would love that.
Okay, so I didn't realize this, but, apparently earlier this week, Oscar Mayer introduced hot dog flavored ice cream sandwich, and now French's is introducing a mustard ice cream, which will sound gross. So I'm going to leave that to Mike to try. He's our food tester.
Yeah. he can test all of these foods and then write an article and post it on Global Ag Network so then people can just go read his review.
I think actually that would be, I've thought about doing that too myself. I think that would be actually really fun.
Yeah, it would be a great way. It's like you just be your little food critic, but you just write a fun article.
Yeah.
And yeah.
All right. Let's assign that to Mike when he gets back.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely Mike's job.
It is. It absolutely is. But on a more serious note, Madison, looking at some of the news that's been really dominating the headlines this week has been China. And as we know, President Trump has threatened to impose another round of tariffs, or really the last round on all possible goods coming in from China will be tariffed at that point on September 1st. But it appears that even though China has said they will not buy U.S. ag products if that happens, they have not cut off the buying yet. As of August 1st, according to the USDA, China is still buying U.S. soybeans. And actually, August 3rd, they've got some data there from the weekly export sales numbers. USDA reported net sales of 126,000 metric tons of soybeans to China and exports of 516,000 metric tons. For sorghum, they also say there have been some net sales there of about 25,000 metric tons. So it appears that China has not yet backed off on buying soybeans yet, but that September 1st date is definitely one that we are going to have to continue to watch.
Yes, and that's coming up pretty soon. Like, it'll be here before we know it.
Absolutely. Yeah, the state fair is usually my time when I'm like, oh, crap, summer is pretty much over now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. But speaking of some trade news, USMCA again is in the news today with House Democrats and Trump administration continuing to discuss different changes for this trade deal during the August recess. But a new prediction from a Texas Democrat did cast a lot of doubt on the goal of the landing deal in hopefully September. But they are really, really discussing the labor issues that have kind of come up, and they're needing to be addressed with not only Mexico, but also Canada, as well as us. And so hopefully we can continue to see this rolling and get this ratified soon.
Yes, it seems like even though Congress is on recess, we're still seeing some staffers and other folks working on USMCA. So I don't know if it's going to get done by the end of this year, but I think people are still kind of hopeful that we might see it be wrapped up by the end of this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like they are trying to get this done, even though they are in recess, because it's just been on their desks for so long.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yesterday, Mike talked a little bit about some of the interest rates and economic stuff that we've been seeing flowing in and out of farm country. And the FDIC, which is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and of course most banks are, or I think all banks have to be FDIC'd now, but they put out a quarterly call report which reveals delinquency rates for commercial agriculture loans in both the real estate side and non-real estate side, so the capital side, such as equipment, etc. They're at a 6-year high, those delinquency rates. For the first quarter of 2019, about 2.5% of commercial real estate loans in agriculture were more than 30 days past due, which, you know, up from 2.1%, so not up a huge amount there, but historically about 2.1% is where those delinquency rates sit for agriculture, and similarly about 2.3% of non-real estate loans in agriculture were more than 30 days past due, which is up from 1.5% in the prior quarter, and the historical average there is about 1.7%. So really over the past 6 years here, we've continued to see more folks struggling to make those payments on time, and that data just continues to be backed up here by some firm numbers.
Yes, definitely. I think that's kind of become a trend almost that we've seen because like farmers have been struggling more and more. So then obviously those loans are not being paid correctly as they struggle more.
Absolutely.
As the years go on.
That is correct, Madison. Well, let's see. What else do you have jumping out at you for news today?
Well, the UN did release their climate change report yesterday, and they kind of laid out a dire future for the agriculture industry if climate change isn't adequately addressed. So, obviously, rising temperatures will intensify droughts, floods, and heat waves, but at the same time, this also will affect soil loss and just everything that goes along with climate change. But a lot of what they are saying for solutions is proposing to improve land productivity, decreasing food waste, and consuming less meat, which also promotes sustainable agriculture practices like improved soil management and planting more trees, which I think a lot of our industry has gotten a lot better about. This has been a huge topic in the news since however long, I don't even know, for years almost. But one thing that stood out to me was that they are really focusing in on people's diets and red meat consumption, which obviously I have an issue with because, like, we raise cattle. Our freezer's full of beef right now. Like, that's about it. That's all we have.
Yeah.
But, so I guess we'll kind of see how this continues to develop as they do more research.
All right.
But right now they're looking for people to eat less meat to save the climate, is a quote.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, don't either.
It might by some people. I don't plan on partaking in that. I could see eating less red meat. I mean, I know that that does increase your chances of, like, heart disease and stuff, but I still am not going to ever not eat it.
Yeah. No, and, like, one of the things that I kind of have an issue with them putting a lot of the blame on, like, ag is because when they say don't eat meat, don't eat this, don't eat that, but then they make these, like, alternate protein sources that use more energy and more resources to make rather than just, like, raising a calf that will and just go to the meat locker almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're making it look like meat, so it's like, that's, you know, we've had this discussion before, but yeah. Well, the only other piece of news I had for today is just a quick update here on the chlorpyrifos decision. We know that EPA has said that they will not be allowed to use chlorpyrifos as a tool anymore, as a chemical, and six states and a coalition of environmental groups and farm workers, or I'm sorry, We've seen the EPA said that they can continue using chlorpyrifos, but we've seen six states and a coalition of environmental farm workers and other groups are suing the EPA about that decision. They said that this should not be allowed. Those states include California, New York, Vermont, Maryland, Washington, and Massachusetts. They filed a suit in the Ninth Circuit alleging that the EPA did not meet a requirement in the Federal Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act to ensure the product is safe. And so they said the EPA needs to reverse that decision back and not allow chlorpyrifos to be a used tool anymore. So we will continue to watch how that story develops.
Yes, we definitely will.
Madison, did you have any other news for today?
I am all out.
All right. Well, then let's take a look at the commodity markets today. Of course, our markets are sponsored by the Zahner Group, which Mike mentioned yesterday they had a great webinar. I think you can catch that on the Zahner Group YouTube page. They were discussing the report that is coming out on Monday, folks, the WASDE report. I'm sure you're all watching it closely as well. It seems like we have had some strength, especially in the soybean markets, heading into this report. So let's take a look at where they closed for today. Looking in the September corn contract, we lost just 0.75 cents to close at 4.10 1/4. The December contract cut 0.5 cent to end at 4.17 3/4. In the soybean pits, the August contract up 8 3/4 cents to close at 8.73 3/4. November new crop contract up 8 3/4 cents as well to close at 8.91 3/4. The wheat pits had just slight gains today, with the September contract putting on a penny to close at 4.99 1/2. The December contract up 1.5 cents to close at 5.01 1/2. Looking over into the livestock pits, the live cattle contract August put on 10 cents to close at 10.805. The October unchanged to close at 10.675. In the feeder cattle pits, they were not spared today. The August contract shed 95 cents to close at 138.90 this September, cut $1.425 to close at 138.45. In the lean hog pits, we're seeing a little bit of some spread action here with the August contract up $1.67 to close at 79.02. The October down 90 cents to close at 66.97.5. And rounding out our markets with the dairy class 3 milk futures, the August contract up 7 cents to close at 17.61. And the September added 8 cents to close at 17.87. Now for today's interview, we are going to be turning it over here to our field reporter, Bruce Gorder, who had an interview with Craig Hill of the Iowa Farm Bureau talking about the nutrient reduction strategy and how that's working, especially in years like this one. So let's turn it over to Bruce.
6 years ago, Iowa developed what is called the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy in an effort to improve water quality in the state. The Iowa Farm Bureau was there at the beginning. I recently had a chance to visit with Iowa Farm Bureau President Craig Hill to get an update on the strategy and see how it's working.
It took a number of years to develop that strategy. I think work began maybe as early as 08 with the Hypoxia Task Force that was formed to look at how we can respond to the needs of reducing that hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. But our voting delegates, our organization, approved a nutrient reduction strategy in 2012, an approach that we felt provided a voluntary menu of items and practices that we can all do, depending on your landscape, to both reduce nitrogen and reduce phosphorus loadings in our rivers and streams. And the legislature approved that in 2013 and adopted that as a strategy for the state. We had lots of accolades from those, even from EPA. I remember Gina McCarthy at the Iowa State Fair years ago that said this should be a model for other states. And so we were praised by the EPA. And so we felt very good about what we had prepared as a plan, and now it's time to execute. Farmers have been executing that plan, and they look at that menu of things they can do on their farms. It takes investment. It takes a lot of money to accomplish these goals. And with poor economics on the farm, it slowed us a bit, I think. When we have prosperity, we have more money to spend toward conservation. But progress has been pretty substantial.
Now, it's a collaborative effort, isn't it, Craig? Not just farmers, but the university and the state of Iowa, and also private industry is involved with this whole thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, farmers have over the years depended a great deal on USDA and RCS for assistance, and both technical assistance and financial assistance in some of our conservation efforts. But we've had the state step forward, passage of Senate File 512, which I believe provides around $280 million over the next decade or so for farmers to utilize to bring practices to their farm. We've got several organizations that have sprung up, IAWA, Iowa Water Organization, that a consortium of commodity groups have formed, NREC, which is the Iowa Nutrient Research and Education Council, and I'm a part of that, as Farm Bureau has been a member with agribusiness and others in that effort. The state of Iowa, the federal government, private enterprise, commodity organizations, farm groups, we've all stepped up, and I think that was the motivation behind the plan, that it should be proactive, voluntary efforts with a lack of finger-pointing. We didn't think that we should all be pointing at urban and rural and all of the various components that do lead to nutrient loading, but yet work together and collaborate together to resolve this issue.
Now, farmers are certainly doing their part, not only physically, but financially. They're also putting in a lot of money. What types of projects have you seen farmers doing in Iowa to improve water quality?
Well, certainly. And, you know, it varies where you are in the state. In my area in Warren County, my sense is that on my farm that soil retention, and slowing the load of phosphorus in water is more important than the nitrates. And so terraces, grassed waterways, saturated buffers in some cases. You know, when we control erosion with no-till and the adoption of no-till, when we reduce erosion with cover crops. And so those practices in some areas are heavily adopted. And then in others, nitrates may be a bigger concern, bioreactors. We celebrate farmers when they do take initiative. I know of a farmer in Jasper County that will be celebrated here at the state fair for installing two bioreactors, which are very expensive propositions to filter and treat about 170 acres on his farm. But it just varies where you are in the state. And again, for some, it's cover crops. For some, it's a wetland. And creating a new wetland, there's a number of those around the state being created. Again, saturated buffers and a whole host of other things. You know, Bruce, we have we've already taken steps to manage our application of fertilizer properly. The right product, the right rate, the right placement. Those efforts have been ongoing, and we've got a pretty good handle on that. We're not mistreating our fertilizer products or our manure products. We're injecting and doing the right practices to put those nutrients where they need to be and where they need to stay.
Now, you've been through 6 years now of the strategy, and it looks to me, Craig, like it's a work in progress. That you're learning new things every year, it seems to be, especially with cover crops and with some of the other practices that you've talked about. So everybody is learning as you go along, I'm assuming.
Yes, and you know that's an important point. You've got to recognize certain realities, and some of the nitrogen and phosphorus load, some of the nutrient loads, are natural. We won't be able to control some. And so to identify what is controllable by our practices or maybe what loads are there natural occurring is something that we need to study a little bit so we know, you know, realistically what we can do. We won't end erosion. We never will. But we can learn a lot about, you know, the timing of heavy rainfall events and how we should prepare for those rainfall events. Nitrogen, as I mentioned, is natural occurring. You know, what microbial activity leads to additional mineralization and conversion that would result in a mobile form of nitrogen. So there's a lot of work yet to do, and we expend funds and research continuously.
Now, you mentioned there is a lot of work left to do, but after this six-year period, do you see progress being made on all fronts there?
There is, and I think we're surpassing 1.5 million acres now of cover crops. There's some reports yet to come out that we're looking forward to see and measure that progress. We have education out there that I'm really proud of. Our farmers are understanding and learning more. The demonstration projects that we have around the state are well attended and observed, and we're learning. We're helping one another understand and do better. So that's a big part of this, is just the educational piece.
The strategy is getting national attention from other farm groups and the federal government. Our thanks to Craig Hill, president of the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation. I'm Bruce Gorder for Ag News Daily.
Huge thanks to Bruce there for bringing us that interview. I always think it was really interesting what they had there.
Absolutely, that it was, Madison. Madison, tell us before we let the people go for the weekend, how can they find us on social media?
Well, Delaney, listeners can always find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Ag News Daily and at Global Ag Network. But if they want to get caught up on past episodes, they can always find us at globalagnetwork.com/agnewsdaily. But also they can find so many more, not only podcasts, but also articles and from our other providers.
All right, Madison, with that, should we let the people go?
Let's let them go.